Driving without a valid license in Wisconsin is against the law.
I'm in a rush. I'm trying to get to my grandma so I can take her to the hospital.
I'm on my way to see my grandma in the hospital.
I just picked my uncle up from the hospital.
But it's almost never a crime.
Why are you talking to me?
Because you're still driving.
No matter how many times you do it.
Try to get a license.
Yeah, that's what I'm working on now.
This week on Open Record.
There's no accountability right now.
Chronic revoked drivers.
I remember getting hit, and then I don't remember flying.
With an utter disregard for your safety. From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I am joined this week by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are joined by Contact 6's Jenna Sachs. Hey, Jenna.
Hello.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, March 20th, for release on Thursday, March 21st. And this week, we're going to talk about a problem that has plagued Milwaukee literally for years. Unlicensed drivers, those who are suspended, revoked, or never had a driver's license at all. You'll hear how we found one of the city's most persistent offenders and dangerous drivers, and the proposed change in state law that could land people like him in handcuffs instead of back in the driver's seat. We'll talk about that after this. You guys know we have talked a lot on this podcast about reckless driving in Wisconsin. It's a term that I'm almost afraid to use because I think it's overused. We talk about it so much that it maybe it's lost its...
Well, and we've even talked about how we don't even know what it really means.
It's difficult to define.
Yeah,
it has a different meaning, I think, to everyone. Where do you draw the line? What is reckless driving? It is a stubbornly persistent problem. We know that. But one of the common threads we find in a lot of the reckless driving crashes we hear about and when we do these stories is that the driver involved has a suspended or revoked license or never had a license in the first place. And that's, of course, the subject of the story that aired last night. We're recording this on Wednesday. It aired on Tuesday night.
So you've reported on this topic before multiple times. What
sure.
drew you to it again? Was it a person? Was it an issue that drew you to it?
What's interesting is this time I was watching a Milwaukee City Council committee meeting. Really exciting, I know, as I was watching on the City Channel. And during this committee meeting, this goes back several months, they were talking about possible legislation that was coming up in the legislature and where the city would stand on some of these things. And there was someone from the city, Department of Administration or the mayor's office, who was looking at this and said, there's one bill that could really focus on reckless drivers by focusing on their license status, and it would get tough on suspended and revoked drivers. It would criminalize driving while suspended or revoked on the first offense. And as I watched it, my thought was, oh, the city's not going to go for this because there's so many people who oppose that because of the concerns of the impact it could have on drivers who are poor, who are not able to pay their fines. So I expected them to say, this is one we can't support. To my surprise, they said the mayor's on board and they voted unanimously to stand behind this and to say the city wants to see this happen because essentially it's gotten so bad. Something's got to give. Something's got to happen. So that's what drew me to it, was the city is talking about supporting legislation that is being discussed but hasn't yet been filed. So what I did at the time is I filed an Open Records request. Here we are, an Open Record.
Yep.
That request was for 5 years of Milwaukee police traffic data, and I ended up updating that data through the end of 2023 as time went on. So it's data that goes from the beginning of 2019 to the end of 2023, 5 full years. There were more than 200,000 traffic citations in the city of Milwaukee in that time. So this is a huge data set. And what I wanted to see in that is, of those 200,000 citations, how many were for operating while suspended or revoked, and how many involved these chronic repeat offenders? And so after doing some data manipulation, we came up with some statistics that we'll talk about a little bit later. But it drew me in particular to this one person we profile in the story, and that's Quinton Ward.
Well, and one of the things when we do stories that have kind of that same theme, so reckless driving, driving while revoked, those kind of things, it's difficult as a journalist to go, okay, how can I do this story in a different way? Who else can I talk to that it isn't the same thing, lather, rinse, repeat? So how did you, you know, how did you approach that in a way that you're like, what can I take? Was it the data that you got from NPD?
Well, the data was certainly a starting point, but part of my interest in this as well is historical because I've been here now at Fox 6 News, believe it or not, for almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years in June. And in that time, I've done a lot of reporting on this very issue of driving while revoked or suspended, and the law has evolved over time. Before I even came to Fox 6 News in 2004, the state of Wisconsin had a totally different law. And we talk about that in the story last night. It used to be a crime to drive while suspended or revoked, but that was really clogging up the courts with so many cases that they actually, in Milwaukee County, set up a dedicated courtroom. It was Judge John Seifert for a long time who was handling operating while revoked cases and operating while suspended cases. It was so much court time that there were others who said this law is a mess. Counting how many offenses there have been is a mess for the officers in the field. We need to clean this up. So Governor Tommy Thompson actually instituted a task force. And that task force, the intention of that was to clean up the law, to make it simpler. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, how the law sort of has evolved over time. But knowing that, I realized it's the state of the law right now that I don't think a lot of people realize quite where it is and how it got this way.
You know, one thing that makes your stories so compelling on this issue is that you usually profile one person who's had repeated run-ins with the police. You have that video from the body camera, from the squad cars to help with it. Who did you focus on for this story as kind of your example of this issue?
So one of the names that stood out when we crunched all of the data was Quentin Ward. He's, I think, now 38, 39 years old.
So you found him in the data.
I found him in the data. When I took those 200,000 records and I pulled out those who had driving while suspended or revoked citations, I sorted them by name and I attached the names to dates of birth. I did some data work here. It's sort of the math nerd stuff. And I was able to find the people with the most individual offenses for driving while suspended or revoked. And I actually wanted to focus on revocations in particular, because there are a lot of reasons people's licenses get suspended that don't have much to do with dangerous driving. But usually once you get to revocations, there's something more. It's a series, it's habitual. A pattern, it's mm-hmm. habitual, or there's something more serious, like maybe hit and runs or things like that, that have prompted the revocation. So I wanted to look at those who are being repeatedly stopped for driving even after their license has been revoked. And Quentin Ward's name, it may not have been at the very top of the list, but it was very close to the top. I looked at the top four or five, and what stood out to me, the reason I gravitated to Quentin Ward is I looked at his record in CCAP as well and noticed that he currently had an open felony case for hit and run causing great bodily harm from 2022. But these citations went all the way through the end of 2023, which meant even after he was involved in a really serious crash, was caught, arrested, and charged, it didn't stop his driving pattern. He continued to drive recklessly. He was speeding. He was being cited for reckless driving. He was passing on the right. All of it with a revoked license, and it continued to happen again and again. So that's why we focused on him. And Jenna, you point out the videos. I've done this a couple of times, but I think the video is what really connects you to what's going on. Mm-hmm. We can talk about reckless driving as this sort of concept all you want, but when you see how the drivers interact with the officers and some of the things they say, whether they're taking this seriously, whether the officers mm-hmm. are taking this seriously, I think says a lot about the problem we have in Milwaukee right now.
Well, and I think one of the other, talking about video, so it's not just the police video from when they pull over Mr. Ward, but the fact that there's that surveillance video from that hit and run.
Yeah, that was another thing that drew me to this.
That honestly was unbelievable. Like, I mean, and then the fact that
she spoke with you too.
Yes, and that wasn't it. Like, that wasn't the end. It wasn't just he pulled over and was like, are you okay? More happened.
Well, and it is so, this is so interesting, and I don't get to talk about a lot of this. You don't see this in even a 7-minute news story mm-hmm, that this mm-hmm. was, but we requested these videos from police and it took them a long time to get us a video because there's a backlog of video requests at the police department. It took about 4 months. I finally got the videos. I knew by then what the sequence of events was in terms of, I know what the criminal complaint said. It said, you know, that he had panicked and left the scene. I missed one piece in the criminal complaint until later because I looked at the first two traffic stops we had. One was September 7th of 2022, and he's in a maroon Acura where he stopped. 2 weeks later, the maroon Acura is involved in the hit-and-run crash, which we see on surveillance. Mm-hmm. And you see him plow into this 60-year-old pedestrian who's just trying to get to the bus stop, and you see her fly through the air. It's hard to watch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, we know she survived, right, which is one of the only reasons we showed it. We actually did talk to her name is Tina Firetag. I talked to her and I asked her how she felt about us showing that video.
Right.
And she said by now her family's seen it. They know she's okay. She was comfortable with it. We didn't want to re-traumatize her, but we did want people to see exactly what happened because That's what we're talking about. That's the risk here.
But she was affected by it.
She was deeply affected by it. And in fact, she didn't initially want to do an interview. I think she didn't really want to talk a lot about this. But we saw her at the courthouse at one of Quentin Ward's court hearings. And I spoke to her and told her about the story we were doing. And as she talked with me more, I said, would you like to share some of this on the air in an interview? And she said, sure. And she sat down on a bench on the sixth floor of the courthouse. And she told us all about it. And one of the things she told me was it's affected her psychologically. She has a tough time crossing the street to go to a bus stop now. It also affected her ability to walk long distances. She can't go to see her her kids' soccer games anymore because she's got to walk a long way across the field or the park. She can't go to State Fair anymore because there's a lot of walking at State Fair. So it's had a lasting impact on her quality of life. And then, of course, there's the medical bills.
Right.
She had like $100,000 or more in medical bills. Thankfully for her, we didn't talk about this in the story. Thankfully for her, the Wisconsin Crime Victims Fund, a compensation fund, did pay for a significant portion of that. I don't think she's going to get much of anything out of Quentin Ward himself.
Well, and I just want to say, too, in not only did you ask Tina about showing the video, we also had a conversation here at the station. We don't just arbitrarily show intense video like that without talking it through, pros and cons, how we word that and how we show it to viewers.
And I want to complete my thought from earlier, though, which so we get to this video of Tina Firetag, and there's this maroon car, right? The maroon Acura. Sure. The next traffic stop that we have happens 2 months later, and there's a white Acura. It looks like the same car, but it's white, so I think he must have a different car by now. Looking closer at the criminal complaint later, I reread the criminal complaint and noticed it said he told police when he was picked up in this traffic stop 2 months later, they asked him, hey, this is the same VIN number. This looks like the same car. And he admits, yeah, after that accident, I painted the car white. So he was trying to hide from what he knew was this terrible thing. He drove away. He went to the lengths of painting the car a different color to try to disguise that it was him. They ultimately determine it's him. They arrest him. They charge him. Prosecutors charge him with this crime. And then he gets right back out. And he keeps driving again and again and again in a variety of vehicles. And of course, those traffic stop videos, there's
a script there that he seems to be using.
There's a script. He every time, and it's part. If you watch the story, you'll see that we showed how in each one he sort of repeats some of the same themes.
Yeah. I'm in a rush. I'm trying to get to my grandma, so I can take her to the hospital.
I'm on my way to see my grandma in the hospital.
I just picked my uncle up from the hospital.
This is my girlfriend, Clark.
This is my child, mother, Clark.
She just bought the car.
She haven't got it registered yet?
She just got the car a couple days ago.
She just got it 2 days ago.
She got the car last week.
You have a driver's license on you?
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to lie to you, sir. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm not going to bullshit you.
I'm not going to even bullshit you around.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't got no license.
And some of these weren't in video. In stops that we didn't get video for, he said his girlfriend was in labor, his girlfriend he just found out was pregnant, or in one case he just said, I have to go to the bathroom. So every time there was an excuse for why I'm going fast, why the car isn't registered, and I'm going to be up front, I don't have a license. But in the end, in every single case except one, he drove right away. They write the ticket and they let him drive away knowing that he doesn't have a license.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir. Slow down. Have a good day.
One of the stops that we're talking about here that we do have video of, because even in the story, if you watch it, we do the old record scratch, rewind. What was that stop? What did the officer say?
One where Milwaukee police had stopped Ward, and they explained to him that they looked at his driving record, and it's terrible. It's long. This is one of the longest we've seen. They said, but lucky for you, this works to your advantage. Your license was not revoked due to drunk driving, because if it was, this would be a crime. And that's one of the things in the current law. It's a crime if the underlying offense that caused your revocation is drunk driving. The officer says to him, but because it's only for your driving record, it's just a ticket.
If he was revoked for an OWI, you'd be going to jail right now. Okay. But because it's only for your driving record, it's just a ticket here.
And it really stood out to me the way the officer worded that. It's because it's only for your terrible, dangerous driving record, this is just a ticket. The fact that that works in your favor really stood out to me as a perversion of the law. That I can't imagine that's what the intent was as this law has evolved, but it's where we are today.
All right. Did you want to talk some more about that law after we take a little break?
We do. You're right. Thank you for the reminder that we're going to take a break and we're going to talk about how the law got this way right after this. So as I mentioned earlier, it was about 30 years ago, nearly 30 years ago anyway, in the mid-90s, that the state law in Wisconsin on suspended and revoked driving said it was a crime on the first offense. Now, that didn't always mean people went to jail, but the courts were clogged with these cases. Governor Tommy Thompson appoints a task force to sort of revamp these laws, and the task force ultimately comes out with recommendations. And one of those recommendations was to make driving while suspended a mere citation, not a crime, but leave driving while revoked criminal. Because, and we interviewed a retired judge, Jim Gramling, who was part of that task force. He says part of the reason for that was driving while revoked usually results from more serious offenses. So leave that in the criminal realm, but let's get rid of these much larger number of suspension issues, at least get them out of the criminal court, and they can result in more citations and longer suspensions and ultimately maybe lead to revocations. That change happened back in the late 90s, but they weren't done. In 2011, and this is where I didn't get to talk about this in the story, this is where I think it may have been an unintended consequence. At the time, there was an overhaul of the law to make it tougher on people who were driving while suspended or revoked if they cause serious injury or death, to make it criminal or even a felony if you kill someone when you're driving and you shouldn't have been. But when they revamped the law and overhauled it to make room for those offenses, they decriminalized operating while revoked if there's no injury or death involved. So now you have both operating while suspended and operating while revoked are just forfeitures, just traffic tickets, unless the underlying offense for the revocation was a drunk driving. And in those cases, it can still be criminal. But now you have this situation where a Quentin Ward can be stopped again and again and again and again, and every time it's just a ticket. It never rises to the level of a criminal offense.
Did that law evolve? I mean, I know we kind of talked about, you know, we alluded to it a little bit, but it was that it was clogging up the courts. It was maybe focusing on or targeting people that couldn't afford to pay these citations. Was all of that why it transitioned throughout the
years? It's certainly, if you talk to Jim Gramling, who now is a board member for the Wisconsin Justice Initiative, it's one of the things they feel very strongly and passionately about is there are a lot of people for whom the situation they're in terms of having a suspended license may be simply a matter of being in a deep financial hole. They get one speeding ticket like any of us could, and then they can't afford to pay that fine. And then the non-payment of that fine results in a longer suspension. They've got a job to get to. They have childcare they've got to get to. They have things they have to accomplish, so they continue to drive. And they may not be dangerous drivers. They may not be people who are being reckless, but then they get pulled over again. Or in some cases, maybe they get into an accident that's not even their fault, and it's found they're driving while suspended. Mm-hmm. And now the cycle only continues. If you make a criminal out of that person, they say, we're adding criminals to the system who aren't really causing any danger to others and really are only there but for the fact that they just don't have the money to pay their fines. So the idea was, let's get away from punishing people who are poor and focus on the people who are dangerous. But in changing the law, they kind of swung the pendulum all the way to where even some of these dangerous people like Quentin Ward get this light treatment where it never rises to the level of a crime.
So you had a few different perspectives in your story, from people who think the law should change to address this issue.
Sure.
Can you give us an idea of the range of opinions you heard?
Well, one of the people we talked to was State Senator Van Wongard of Racine, because he is known as he's former law enforcement, and he will be the person who's often authors a lot of these bills that are maybe getting tough, increasing penalties for certain offenses. And in this case, this is one where he said, again, we have kind of a mess of a system. Again, it's hard to get into the details, even in a 7-minute news story, but operating without a license can be criminal at a certain point. But what happens in Wisconsin is, if you don't have a license at all, once you commit a couple of offenses, you get your license suspended. And your official status with the state of Wisconsin is that you have a suspended license. So now the offense is operating while suspended. So forget operating without a license. Now it's operating while suspended, which is just a traffic ticket for an unlimited number of times. So even for people without a license, this never rises to the level of being a crime, because they end up in that pool of people who are just suspended. So Senator Wongard said we need to sort of make this more uniform, and also he wants to see it return to what it was in the 90s. Sort of the pendulum swing all the way back to making it a crime on the first offense. That is not universally supported, even by those in law enforcement who support the idea of getting tougher on this issue.
And the reason for that is resources?
Resources is a huge one. I talked to, we asked Milwaukee police for an interview. They declined, but we did talk to the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office and Inspector Doug Holton, who is in charge of the patrol division there. And he said they, Danita Ball, the sheriff in Milwaukee County, didn't endorse this legislation, but she didn't oppose it either. It's a tough spot because on the one hand, they think the law is not working the way it is right now. They want to see changes. They want to see more tools in their toolbox to deal with these chronic offenders. On the other hand, if you make it a crime on the first offense, he said they don't have the resources to turn every one of these into an arrest. They don't have space in the jail. It would be unwieldy to try to do this without adding significant resources, jail space, costing a lot of money that politicians right now don't seem keen to come up with. So they talked about the idea, Inspector Holton. We talked to Alderman Michael Murphy, who we've had on our digital election coverage, who's outgoing Alderman Murphy, the former chair of the Milwaukee Reckless Driving Task Force. And we've talked to them and they want to see a little more of a different approach. And actually, we're going to take a break and we can talk about the approach they'd like to see when we come right back. So as I said, Senator Weingart's bill would swing the pendulum back to the 90s when it would be a crime on the first offense. And there were supporters of that. Actually, one of the surprising supporters, I think, was Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson and the Milwaukee City Council, Common Council. They supported that idea of even swinging the pendulum all the way back to first offense crime, but mixed reviews from a lot of other sources. The ACLU, for instance, was one who said this would be, I think it was the ACLU, Legal Action of Wisconsin, in fact, who said this legislation would create 100,000 new criminal cases per year.
Wow.
And even Alderman Michael Murphy, who was the chair of the Reckless Driving Task Force in Milwaukee for many years, said you're just not going to see 100,000 more people going to jail over an issue like driving while revoked or driving while suspended. So he and others are calling for some sort of balance, some sort of a middle of the road solution here.
So what might a middle of the road solution look like?
Well, one of the things I kept hearing over and over, even when I interviewed Senator Weingart, is he said, when I asked him about the importance of first offense criminalization, he actually said, when these you get to these people who are doing this 2, 3, and 4 times, it's got to be a crime. Well, that's different. That's not the first offense. Mm-hmm. When I talked to Alderman Murphy, he says, again, you get to the second, the third, the fourth time, the repeat offenders, these are the people we should be focusing on. Jim Gramling had a little bit of a different approach. Again, he is with Wisconsin Justice Initiative, the retired Milwaukee judge, municipal judge. He said that he's not sure if he would support that or at what point he would, but what he wants to see first is that we change how licenses are suspended or why they're suspended in the first place in Wisconsin. Too many licenses, he said, are already suspended for reasons that have nothing to do with dangerous driving. For instance, failure to pay a fine is one. You can have your license suspended because you didn't pay child support. Not that child support isn't important, but that has nothing to do with driving.
Sure.
You can lose your license for perjury in court. Again, it has nothing to do with driving. What he's saying is there are other remedies for collecting child support. There are other remedies for collecting fines. There are, you know, there's obviously garnishment. There is tax intercept. There's all sorts of other financial ways to do that. He wants to see a limit on the number of things that result in a suspension. If you reduce the reason or the number of suspensions and revocations, but do it for reasons that are directly connected to dangerous driving, then he says he might support going toward something that involves cracking down on the repeat offenders. So even those who've opposed these laws in the past are saying we could come around if we work together on this. So there is potentially a middle ground, but so far I haven't seen anyone propose that in actual legislation.
So we talked about how Mayor Johnson, you know, supported kind of that Senator Weingart stuff, the Weingart. But was it like a surprise that the city kind of swung that way as opposed to being...
As I said in the beginning, it's something that I found maybe surprising. I think we know that reckless driving has been this chronic issue in Milwaukee, and I know that Mayor Johnson has been adamant that it's one of his top issues to deal with. So it's not that I'm surprised that he wanted to do something more about reckless driving. I think with this particular issue, because of the concerns of the ACLU, the State Bar of Wisconsin opposed it, Legal Action of Wisconsin, because of their concerns of the impact on a large swath of Milwaukeeans who might be dealing with suspensions merely because they can't afford the fines, I think think it was, if nothing else, it was interesting to see where he came down on that and that the full Common Council supports it. I think it says a lot about the frustration in Milwaukee among elected officials with this ongoing problem mm-hmm. that seems intractable. They've made all these engineering changes to the streets. They're doing more to increase public education. And you know, obviously there's been a step up in terms of the number of tickets that, the police were writing with the traffic enforcement unit, traffic safety unit, but it's a problem that persists. And so I think they're looking for all options. And this is one where they said it might be drastic, but they think it's necessary.
So that's what the city of Milwaukee has been doing. What about on the state level? You mentioned that Senator Wongard had a bill. Now it seems the session's closed, right?
So this bill was introduced back in the fall, and there were public hearings right away, and it seemed to be sailing through. And in fact, this passed the full Senate back in October, November, and went to the Assembly. And then it got stuck in the Assembly, in part because of some of this opposition as these groups started to lobby it and push back. It never got a hearing in It got a hearing in the Assembly in a committee. That was never voted on. It never got to the full Assembly. When I interviewed Senator Wongard on this back in January, he said, I think this is going to pass. I think that's going to get through. But as time went on, nothing happened. And now the session has wrapped up. So the way, and I've had some people say, why are they done in March? I mean, we got the whole rest of the year to go. In Wisconsin, we have 2-year legislative sessions where it starts in an odd numbered year in January, goes the entire calendar year into the spring of the even numbered year. And then we get into other stages. They break for interim work where they're working on bills for the next session. And some of them are campaigning and other things like that. But we've reached that end of the cycle because we're in spring of the even numbered year. So this bill is dead. Mm-hmm. And Senator Wongard's staff says he plans to bring it back again next session. That's not until 2025. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a while before anything does change with this law.
So, you know, we talked about swinging back and, you know, trying to find a middle ground. Did you talk? So we're going back to Tina Firetag about, you know, the woman who was hit while she was in the crosswalk. Did she have any thoughts on kind of what can happen, what should happen?
Well, it was really interesting because she obviously has affected her life, and she is, I think, troubled by the fact that the case is still going on. The day we met her in court, we were there for a plea and sentencing. Quentin Ward was supposed to be sentenced that day for this hit and run. Obviously, there was already, after the accident happened, there's a period of time she doesn't know who did it. And then they find him in this white car that's been repainted. They arrest him. He's charged. Now here he is at plea and sentencing, and he came into court and he said, I want to fire my lawyer. We have a disagreement over where this should go. And because of that, they didn't sentence him that day, and he walked out of court. I was actually able to talk to him in the hallway.
Yeah, how did that conversation go? Because we saw a little bit of it in the story.
Yeah, it didn't really go much of anywhere. I asked him why he's still driving. And you know, why he hasn't taken this more seriously after being charged with seriously injuring someone, seriously affecting someone's life. He faced away from me. Interestingly enough, he went after I asked him a couple of questions, he went and found the attorney he had just fired and asked him to walk down the hall with him, almost as sort of protection to get away from me. Hmm. And then he left. So he didn't talk to me any further after that. But when we talked to Tina Firetag, she said, you know, I just want this to be resolved. It's just sitting out there, and she just wants it to be over with. She wants him to get his, you know, whatever's coming to him, and then she can move on. She has to keep taking off of work to come to the courthouse and sit there and then watch nothing happen and then find a way to get back again. And it's difficult for her to get around, more difficult now than it was before. So it's not a small thing. In terms of what should happen with the law, I asked her, you know, what do you think should happen to someone like a Quentin Ward? And she said, well, they should take it more seriously, but where are they going to put him? That was even her mindset is, I don't know what they're going to do because where are they going to put them? Can you really put people like this in jail? And this is coming from someone, obviously, whose life was altered. She recognizes the challenge that's ahead for lawmakers.
Well, there seems like there's consensus among people who live in and around the Milwaukee area that something has to happen. So someone who's lived in Milwaukee, I'm happy that we're having these conversations and trying to figure out what should change. It's just, it would be nice to see some progress or something happen at some point? Do you get the impression that this isn't going to go away? There will still be more efforts. I know WandGuard's still looking at it.
I think there have been efforts. You certainly can't say nothing has happened. I mean, Milwaukee police now do have the tow policy. Mm-hmm. So in some limited circumstances, they can tow reckless drivers' cars. Although in many of those cases, they go and they pick those cars up sometimes within the hour if they have the right paperwork, whatever they need to go get it. So it's not as though it's necessarily keeping them off the road for a significant period of time, but it's more of a hassle than just driving away. So there are some things that have happened. At the state level, they have now made it a criminal offense to be cited for reckless driving specifically more than once. And I think this is important because we talk about reckless driving. We said at the beginning, what is it? Mm-hmm. There is a statute called reckless driving in Wisconsin, but it is used sparingly. And there are only certain circumstances under which an officer will cite someone specifically for reckless driving. It might be weaving in and out of traffic. It might be doing something that is beyond just speeding, even if the speed is high. It's not always clear what constitutes reckless driving. The way the law is written, it's simply kind of a negligent behavior. So a lot of things could fall under that umbrella. But because so few of the citations that we looked at are actually written under that statute, finding repeat offenders under that statute is fairly rare. So not much happens with them. I do think there is overall a consensus that more needs to keep happening. And that's why you hear the city saying, yeah, we love this idea because suspended and revoked and unlicensed drivers are a huge problem. What I've seen over the 20 years that I've been covering this is the real challenge is finding whatever that makeup is of the law that distinguishes between the drivers who are simply poor and the drivers who are truly dangerous. And finding that delineation, I haven't seen it yet. I think the pendulum seems to swing one way or the other, but getting that sort of middle of the road thing that handles one and without harming the other has been the elusive solution. And we're still waiting to see if they can come up with that.
Do you think with Milwaukee police, so you asked them for an interview and they declined. Obviously, you did talk to the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office. Does it seem, and you watched hours of body cam video, like, does it seem like the officers and deputies and stuff feel like their hands are tied behind their back? Or do they, I mean, are they taking this seriously?
I think that's one of the things I look for. When we did the story a while back on Dyrell Chaplin, you remember him? He was another one of these repeat offenders. And you remember there's a time where he reaches out with his fist and the officer fist bumped him.
Right.
And there's sort of a symbolism behind that. Like, this isn't that big of a deal. Fist bump, get on your way. Yeah. It might well have been that the officer was just trying to keep things, hey, they're trying to keep things positive. You know, how many times do they have someone who's not treating them with respect, who's driving off and there's a police chase, and maybe he's just grateful that this person seems at least positive and cooperative. But in the end, the question is, what's the message to the community when you're fist bumping at a reckless driver who goes on his way and continues to drive recklessly? I think overall, what you said about them feeling maybe handcuffed a little bit. We heard Inspector Holton say that. He said, we feel a little bit hamstrung was the word he used. Because it's only a citation, how much, we talked about, could you stick around and wait for a licensed driver to come pick them up so you know they're not going to drive away illegally? Well, that could be hours of waiting.
Sure.
And can you afford to have a deputy on the side of the road, out of the rotation, out of service,
waiting
for what constitutes no more than a traffic ticket? Mm-hmm. And you know, the moment he gets home with that driver, he's just going to go drive again. Mm-hmm. So it might look bad to say, here you go, just go continue driving illegally, or I'm going to look the other way and pretend I didn't see you drive away.
You slow down, all right?
Okay.
All right, now you're good to go.
Right now you're legally parked, so I don't have to tow the car. Okay, so I'm going to dip.
On the other hand, how do you justify the resources when the legislature says this is just a citation, it's not even worthy of a criminal offense? And I think that's probably a good time for us to go off the record, so we're going to take a break and do that when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared, but we know that you have prepared, Sarah, because it's your question. So what do you have?
All right. So we've all sat in a car in the front seat, whether we're the driver or the passenger. Many cars have cup holders in between the driver and the passenger, usually two.
I wish I had two. Well, do I? No, I just have one. Wait, no, I do have two. I'm sorry. I have two. Never mind. Forget it. Forget what I said.
Good off the record.
Forget what I said. Yep. Okay.
Okay. So if you have a car with two, which cup holder is the driver's? The front one or the back one?
Well, this is why I momentarily questioned whether I had two, because I realized one of them is usually filled with like a thing of gum and keys and other things. So it's not available for cups.
Yeah.
So the one that's available for cups.
You occupy both cup holders. So what if a passenger comes in and they also, you both have cups?
Well, ours are side by side.
Mine are side by side.
Yeah, ours are side by side. They're not this way.
Do you have a car in the front and the back?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
Oh.
My photographer has one in the back. I usually always claim the back one, no matter what side of the car I'm in. Because, yeah, I did that yesterday in the car with Tim, my photographer.
Oh, yeah.
So he has one that's front and back like that.
Okay.
But no, I think a lot of cars are side by side since you know whose is whose.
That's so interesting. I think both mine and my husband's cars are one in front of the other.
Interesting.
I'll have the gum and the
wait, are the Forerunners that we drive side by front and back? I thought they're side by side.
I'm pretty sure it was front to back yesterday. I could be totally.
You know what this really comes
derailed.
This really comes down to our own attention to detail in daily life, because you do things that you don't have to. You're thinking about 100 other things, so I don't need to know whether they're side by side or front to back. Right?
Wow, what a blessing.
Well, what are in your cup holders? Because mine are filled with these. I'm holding up a glass coffee cup with half drunk coffee. It's like at the end of the week, I'm collecting glasses.
Oh, you know what? They are front to back now, because one is in front of the shifter and one's behind the shifter.
Oh, so it's like, even separate. And
So for me, when I get in the car in the morning by myself, what I'm drinking right now is by the shifter by me, but what's on backup is up front.
Okay. What's on backup?
Usually when I either am driving into work, it's either water or protein shake.
Okay.
And then my coffee is up front, and then I drink that when I get to work.
Sparkling water or flat?
Sparkling.
Yeah.
Ew, he drinks the stuff that isn't even flavored.
No, it's just flat.
What? It's just bubbles.
Costco Italian sparkling water.
Why?
Because I like the bubbles.
I like it too.
Yeah, Gail. But then it has there's no flavor to it.
It just tastes like bubbly spit.
No, it's just that carbonation. It's like it's satisfying.
I will say a pet peeve of my husband's is if there's like a single coin or two underneath the can, and then as the car goes, you hear it rattle a little bit. He drives him nuts when he gets in my car if like anything's rattling.
So you're the one who leaves the coin and he doesn't
probably.
Like
it. I just don't notice it, and he'll notice it the moment he starts driving, and he'll start fiddling around trying to figure out where the noise is coming from. But you know, I've also got a can, like an open can of LaCroix in the door. At the end of the week, I'm always emptying out my water.
So you talked about what's around the car. So I've got the one that's got the gum and the lip balm, and the other one's got usually either a coffee cup from like a Starbucks, or it's got a water bottle or something. But we'll get like a case of the little water bottles, right? You know, the single serve kind of things. And I'll have those on we have a refrigerator in our garage, which is sort of overflow stuff, just an old fridge. And it's on top of there. So when I am going somewhere, sometimes I'll just grab one of those so I've got water. I try to hydrate. But then...
Sorry.
Why is that funny?
I liked how you said that.
So I try to keep, you know, I'm not great about it all the time. I try. This doesn't count as hydration because it's got a lot of caffeine. But I've got one of those, and then I drink that maybe two-thirds of the way through, and that's in the door cup holder.
Yeah.
And then I have another
door
one
water.
That I forget that I have that one, so I get a new one, and I crack that one open, and then that one is laying in the passenger seat because I have no room left over here. Because
you're gum and chapstick are taking up the space.
And you talk about at the end of the week. I get to the end of the week, and I clean out four or five of those.
Stepped up. What?
And sometimes, this is the worst part. Have you ever had one that's like only half down, and you go... Is that still because it's got the cap on it? Is that still fresh water, or did I spit in that one? Have you ever? I don't have anywhere to spit. You spit in the cup.
No,
never.
You've never done that.
Absolutely not.
Come on, that can't just be me.
Oh my gosh! Never spit in my car.
So you're driving. I'm not going to spit out the window because then it goes all over. You know, your face of the car.
Oh my gosh!
So I'll spit into one of those. But then I'm thirsty and I'm in the car and I'm like, wait, is that? Then I have to look at it. And no, I'm not going to risk it.
I'm never driving in your car.
I'm never drinking water in your car.
You don't ever ask me, can I have a sip of that? Because you can, but you may not want to.
What? I'm very good. I pride myself. I take everything out.
Every day?
Every day.
Good
like,
for you.
I don't what? Have...
Oh, no.
I don't have... No, yeah.
With all you have on your plate, you have time to do that?
Yes, because it's a priority. I don't have... I have like a center console thing that goes up. So that's where I keep my other
stuff. Was my next question is what's in the center console? Because
all of Jasmine's stuff.
what is that?
I have... Well, it's like five sunglasses. One sunglass, makeup, To be fair, it's, she works in the car that we drive around
That's
normally.
Fair.
So I have my one little spot for my my glasses in there, and I'm trying to get
You have
out.
A half a spot? Yeah, I also have like 8 pair of sunglasses in my glove box. They're all like free ones because I refuse to pay more than about $8 for a pair. But yeah, it's Mints, Kleenex, my key fob to get in the station. I think I have one of those like window
bashers
in case I drive into a lake.
I wouldn't mind having one of those.
If you have that, do you think you would have the presence of mind to dig through the console?
Not at all. Yeah. I'd panic and I'd black out.
My wife has one of those too. She has it like deep in the glove box. And I'm like, are you going to reach over there and get that?
But also, like, the kids are like, what's this? Put it down. Yeah.
So I have a drawer because I drive a van. But it doesn't shut. So that's kind of the things about my car that's annoying. It kind of like opens and shuts as I drive sometimes. It just shifts around, and I've gotten used to it. But there's like a couple old applesauce pouches in there, and some kids' Dramamine, and maybe some old pokey sticks. Is that how you say pokey sticks? So it's like a snack center.
They're like little cookie, like stick cookies with like chocolate on the end or something.
Dipped in strawberry or chocolate.
Yeah. Kids. Cookies and cream.
And if you leave them out in the summer, they get all melty. So it's a winter thing.
Yeah. This episode sponsored by pokey
sticks.
Is that like Dunkaroos?
No. Dunkaroos are delicious. Are you too young for those, Kale?
At work.
No, I love Dunkaroos. Yeah. You could buy a big, giant, mega pack of them at Costco like last summer.
Oh, they're so delicious.
I don't even know what that is.
What?
Okay.
It's little cookies, and then you dunk them into frosting.
Do you remember in the lunches you used to have the crackers and the
cheese? Like candy snacks?
It's that, but with frosting.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right, that makes sense.
Because remember the red stick that you get with the cream cheese?
Yeah. Do they still sell those?
They sell the, I don't know if
you
they still
the
sell
the red stick or the bread
it's
stick.
It's a
red stick. Red, red stick.
And you would use it to like
red.
Slather it on the cracker.
I know
exactly what you're talking about.
But the worst part was having to ratio the cracker to the cheese or the Dunkaroo to the frosting. And if you could master that, you didn't want to end up with too much of one or the other.
This is off the record creep today, but you talk about, let me ask you. When you make a peanut butter sandwich or peanut butter and jelly, how much peanut butter goes on? And it does just go on one side?
Oh, why you gotta do this to me? I'm still not eating peanut butter. I have 2 weeks left.
Does it go on both
for
sides?
For lunch, did you give it up?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's a hard one.
Peanut butter goes on one side, and I do it after the jelly, because the jelly is thinner, and I can wipe the knife off easier before I stick it in the peanut butter.
Wait, when does the jelly go on?
The same piece of bread?
No.
So you're putting one on each side?
I do the jelly.
Oh, jelly on one
then
side.
Then I use the other piece of bread as my sponge, and I wipe.
I thought you were psychotic, and you put jelly on and then peanut butter on top of the jelly, which would be...
Kale, did you say
But then when do you put the cheese on your PBJC?
Never.
But how is it a PBJC?
It's not a C.
What?
What kind of cheese would taste good?
Just like a cheddar. Slab of cheddar. Whatever I've got.
Nothing.
But you have the jelly on there also?
Yes, PBJC. It's delicious. Okay. Try it.
I could see peanut butter and cheese, even though that sounds weird because I've had peanut butter cheese or like
a cheeseburger with peanut butter,
and
on,
that's actually surprisingly good. I had
it not bad.
AJ Bomber's the first time, and I couldn't believe it was good. But jelly with that doesn't.
But then
seem...
it's sweet, and you think about when you have a charcuterie board.
Yes.
Sometimes you get cheese, and I put the cheese and the jelly, and
sometimes you have like peanuts or nuts with that too.
You know what?
You're
probably right.
You know, the other day I bought processed cheese in the plastic for the first time.
To hear that.
It was for like a certain. We were making these pizza pockets in like kind of like calzones, and they said put cheese in. So my daughter tried it for the first time, and she was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. Do you remember when you thought that stuff was so good?
Yeah,
because then you get older,
just a little craft slice.
I bought organic. It's like, maybe this makes it better if she unwrapped it from the plastic. And I've been catching her like sneaking these processed cheese slices out of the fridge.
Organic processed cheese, don't get it twisted.
That's right.
My wife and I have two stepsons, they've always called that squeaky cheese. Like, I don't know why it's because I think that's what a cheese curd is.
My husband has strong feelings about cheese. American cheese. He's like, it's not American and it's not cheese. So he gets real.
Probably
mad
true,
about
but it doesn't mean it's not delicious.
I tried to tell him.
And you know what? I have to find the opportunity. You know what's really good? A couple of those slices, two pieces of bread, put them in the air fryer.
Speaking of sliced cheese, it is not possible to not eat a slice of cheese when you're making your sandwich for the next
That's
day.
True.
Not possible.
That's true. The one thing I learned from all of this, guys, is Brian spits in his half water bottle.
Oh my gosh, right?
Are you thirsty? Need a sip?
Nope, not
parched. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up right after this. Oh, the things you learn when you ask what someone puts in their the cup holder.
Which one is the driver's?
Go check out your car. Do your cup holders, are they front back? Are they side by side? Do you just
have one? You only have one.
Yeah. And also, are you crazy and only drink carbonated things with no flavor?
With no flavor.
I don't understand.
So oh, I love this.
No, thank you for joining us. Jenna, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yes, Thera, of course.
Obviously, yeah. As always, if you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record, or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. One thing I should point out, by the way, if you are interested in seeing some of these traffic stop videos we talked about today, mm-hmm. we have them strung out into one long, like 20-minute sequence. You can see it at Fox Local. You can see it at fox6now.com and on the Fox 6 YouTube channel. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including, of course, our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.